This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Eleanor, thank you very much. Well, I'm just going to say a little bit in opening, and then I'm sure there'll be lots of very stimulating comment and lots of questions to which we can respond. So I'm just going to say a bit in opening. My guiding text is what Mario Cuomo said many years ago. He said, "You campaign in poetry, but you govern in prose." Well, what I do is at the very mundane end of the prosaic. One of my roles in government, at the centre of government, is to lead the tedious but really important. I don't find it at all tedious, actually. I love it. business, but it's unglamorous, the business of making the bits of government that need to be tightly controlled from the centre work much better. It's about doing things like buying goods and services much more effectively, much more cheaply. It's about getting out of government offices that aren't needed. It's about making sure we don't constantly reinvent the IT wheel and end up with a government IT system that is essentially a whole load of different gauge railways built across the country, not connecting together. You struggle to find glamour in this, but it's really important, and there's a lot of money in it. The experience of successful organisations around the world shows that tight control of spending on these things, major projects, can release very significant savings, and taking a hard-headed approach to recruitment and large contracts makes a big contribution as well. This has not been high priority in government in recent years. And the result of that has been that public sector productivity has actually declined. You know, the money spent in central government has declined over this period, while in the private sector it's increased dramatically. Between 1997 and 2007, public sector productivity growth declined by 3.4%, while productivity in the private services sector, the closest private sector comparator, which obviously excludes manufacturing and other high productivity growth industries, private sector services productivity grew by 20%. So that's 20% growth in the private sector compared with 3.4% decline in the public sector. And it's just worth bearing in mind that if public sector productivity had grown at the same rate as private sector productivity in those 10 years, the government would have saved an extra £60 billion, which is actually not far off the size of the structural budget deficit that this government has inherited. And it's just worth making the point that the dominant overarching backdrop against which everything that this government's going to have to do is that we are today, as a government, spending £4 for every £3 in revenue. So just to keep the teachers paid, the doctors and nurses in the hospitals, all of that, to keep the pensions paid, we're having to borrow a pound out of every four. And you can't do that forever. You can't carry on like this. So I'm going to say a word about what our focus is. One of the things that struck me since coming back into government after an interval of a sabbatical of 18 years was to find that at the centre of government there's a bit of a culture that doesn't differentiate very much between what central government does and what tends to get known as the wider public sector. So I'm going to say a quick word about what my focus is. And when I say I do not concern myself very much with the wider public sector, that doesn't mean I don't care about it, I'm not interested in it. I do get a bit dogmatic about this, though, and before the election, at a gathering, a council leader said to me, "Francis, if the Conservatives win the election and form, or even if they don't win the election and form a government, what do you want us in local government to do?" To which I'm afraid my rather brisk answer was, "I want you to stop asking central government what to do and ask your local residents what you should do. I want local government not to be looking over its shoulder at Whitehall but to face forward to the residents you serve and do what they want you to do. For some councils, that's out of the comfort zone, actually. Some councils have found it very easy, made their life easier to be able to say, well, local, central government, Whitehall's told us we've got to do this. You know, this is all ring-fenced. This is what we've got to do. In planning terms, councils have found it very convenient to be able to say, when dealing with local residents concerned about a particular development, well, central government says we've got to do it. Well, that's no longer the case. Councils are going to have to take responsibility for these things themselves and balance their concern for the local environment with the need for development that there will definitely be and make those judgments. That's what responsibility is about, and be accountable for those decisions. So my concern is not with the wider public sector. It is with what central government itself does, with central government departments and quangos, everything that lies within our direct control. And there will be, I say, in passing by the end of this parliamentary session, fewer quangos than there are today. That doesn't mean to say there are no benefits to the wider public sector from our efficiency and reform programme. As we drive the renegotiation of major contracts, aggregating what they deliver to government across the whole of central government, and as we aggregate central government demand for goods and services and achieve what I believe will be very significant scale economies from those suppliers, those scale economies will be made available to any in the wider public sector who choose to avail themselves of them. But this will be optional, this will be a permissive regime. And I suspect many will want to piggyback off them. And of course, the greater transparency that we are driving, and which Eric Pickles is going to be continuing to drive very vigorously in relation to local government, that greater transparency is, of course, the handmaiden of decentralisation and local accountability. And it will enable local residents to judge whether those benefits that are available through what we're doing in central government, whether those are being properly harvested for the benefit of local taxpayers. So a bit about what we do in central government and quango land. We need to get the balance right between what is done in the centre and what is done by departments and agencies and NDPBs and all the rest of it. And this is known, I think, to management consultants as the loose-tight balance. And there are, of course, some things that the centre of any large, dispersed, complex organisation, some things that need to be controlled and controlled pretty seriously from the centre. Strategic direction, plainly, has to be controlled from the centre. And in our system, that's the Prime Minister and the Cabinet who decide and control strategic direction. Cash has to be seriously controlled from the centre. That's, of course, for the Treasury. You also need strong central control over property, so that one bit of the organisation doesn't do something that is to the disadvantage of the whole. Basic IT infrastructure, say having a single gauge railway running through the system, commodity procurement where scale absolutely buys you significant economies, major projects which carry operational risk, financial risk, reputational risk, these things need to be controlled from the centre. Headcount. At the moment, I used to be amused and irritated at the same time in opposition, when I asked parliamentary questions about the size of the civil service. I used to ask them to the Cabinet Office. The answers were diverted to the Office of National Statistics. It was as if this was a sort of mildly interesting external phenomenon, which the Cabinet Office sort of tried to track out of politeness. But the idea that this was a crucial management tool that seemed to have escaped people. Well, we will need to know what the headcount is and control it, because, as we know, in the public sector, and especially in the civil service, headcount represents really seriously fixed cost. So these things do need to be controlled from the centre. So that's the tight part of the loose-tight balance. But everything else, of course, should be pushed right away from the centre. Delivery of services should be pushed away as close to the front line as you can possibly get. We want the deliverers of public services to be answerable not to ministers and officials sitting in SW1, but to the public that these public servants serve. Under the last government, it seems to us, this loose, tight balance was got almost precisely wrong. The things that need to be tightly controlled weren't very well controlled. Cash, headcount, as I've said, major projects, IT, a number of IT times, IT projects went massively wrong. The wheel being reinvented, you know, our requirements here are unique and distinctive, and so what the department down the road has just procured couldn't possibly be adapted or used for us. There was not that tight central control over the things where a lot of cost in government actually lies. And yet there was a completely, in my view, doomed effort to micromanage delivery from the centre. This whole apparatus of sort of units at the centre, public service agreements, targets, monitoring, auditing, regulation, a flood of guidance to people at the front line so that head teachers who did want to be spending some of their time actually teaching find themselves tied to the computer and the desk to deal with the demands from Whitehall and Town Hall. It's a miracle, actually, anyone ever got to do anything dealing with the public at all. So we will reverse this. The loose, tight balance will be different. We will quite rigorously, as George Osborne, the Chief Secretary, and I announced a few weeks ago, there will be a stronger central mandate to control the things that have to be controlled centrally. But we will push away from the centre the micromanagement. So when you ask in your the blurb advertising this session what kind of leaders the new regime will adopt, we want responsible leaders who will take responsibility for what their organisations do. We will end up, you know, with schools which are more independent than has been the case. We will end up with an NHS where the organisations that deliver frontline healthcare to patients will be more independent and more answerable to the patients that they serve, less answerable to the centre. Do we need to have endless units at the centre to ensure that hospital-acquired infection levels fall? No, you don't. What you need is transparency. And so on, I think, Wednesday last week, we started the process of publishing week by week actual infection rates by hospital so that patients, and in fact, in time, there's absolutely no reason why you shouldn't have real-time information. How many cases of MRSA and C. diff are there in each hospital? So patients can see it and make their choices with their GPs which hospital they go to. That's going to be, seems to us, much more effective in attacking the things which will not all be the same in every hospital, the things which lead to hospital infection rates being where they are. Much more effective than an army of people interfering, advising, guiding from the centre in how to solve it. So that loose, tight balance is at the core of how we think public services will improve. Transparency, absolutely key. So that instead of elaborate mechanisms so that a few people at the centre of government know how what's happening with the delivery of public services, it'll be much easier for the users of public services to know that and to be able to exercise choice over which parts of the public service they use, much more accountability and some redress when things don't get done in the way that they should. The big society theme that you referred to, Eleanor, in opening, is not something which gets done by one bit of government. It's an approach, which a theme which runs should run through everything that we do. We have moved out of the era of big government. Partly that's because, as the retiring Chief Secretary so graphically put it, there is no money left. Thank you for that one. So there is no scope for government being big anymore. But it is secondly a philosophical approach which says we have a stronger society where this complex ecology of formal and informal organisations and neighbourhoods and communities doing things for each other, when they do more, that's when you have a strong, bonded, cohesive society where there is not only personal responsibility but social responsibility as well. Just to make the point in closing, we do not think that as the era of big government draws to an end, the government can simply retrench and assume that the hidden hand of the market will spontaneously lead to voluntary activity and social action filling the gap. There will be things that the government, that the state needs to do, particularly in areas of massive, complex deprivation, where there isn't, at the moment, sufficient social action to start to solve the social problems. So there will need to be, and there will be, and we have some plans published which we're working on implementation at the moment to stimulate and support activity to prime, to create the social capital on which big society will depend as we go forward.